colleagues, you are most welcome. This is the third session of learning session. So that before we even start, I'm told that the WWF World Chairperson was supposed to be with us, for some reason is unable to be with us. That's the information I have. That does mean that we are unable to proceed, we proceed. But also I'm told that the minister is still caught up in a meeting that she is in. She might join us a little bit later. But that's the only apologies I have. The reason why we felt that let's have this planning session is so that we have a sense broadly what are these things that the department would like to do this year, broadly, high level, not necessarily in the ATT format, just high level. What are these things that the department would like to achieve at a political level from the minister, deputy minister, but how do we then drill down to programmatic areas as they will then be presented to us by the DG. Of course, we then have engagements. But as Parliament, we also needed to be clear in our mind for the year, entire year, what are these things that will be occupying ourselves with. Indeed, we might even, as we have this discussions, even take the period to even mid-term timeline, if we believe that it's the right thing to do. But for now, we are only concentrating on the year, that is Parliament. What are these things that we need to do for the year in carrying forward our work? While on that, colleagues, I know that the Chief Whip will come in at some stage on a proposed broad program. But as colleagues will know, one of the things that we had to do at a high level is engage with the South African society on matters that are environmental. So that's what we have seen, colleagues and friends and colleagues from the department. What we have seen, this is a sector that is very specialized, and we need to find a way of getting South Africans to have discourse and a discussion on matters environment in its broader sense. So we must then find a formula as Parliament, because we are a Parliament of the people. We are an institution that allows people to engage on whatever discourse. In our program, we must then find a way of how do we get South Africa talking on matters of environment. Whether it's matters of crime against our wildlife, whether it matters that speaks to the health impact of the mine dams that we have in our country, and how do we deal with that as a country, and how do owners of those mine dams deal with those issues, whether it issues of how we manage on behalf of the people of South Africa our oceans and coasts at the broader level. How do we get South Africa speaking? Whether the issues of dealing with invasive species and the politics and the rationale behind dealing with invasive species, issues of dealing with the beautification, all those issues, so that they don't become issues that are just discussed by a few elites in parliamentary rooms or in government rooms. We must find a way, and that's the role of this parliament. Matters of climate change. This Paris Agreement that we have, yes, at our level, in interacting with affairs as a department, we must know how do we localize this Paris Agreement and what are the plans that we will take forward in the localization of this agreement. And as you will know, as Parliament, we have said you can't localize when you don't have such localization fit in a legislative framework. And we are still married to that. But of course, we still have to ratify the Paris Agreement, but ratify it in Parliament and our people not being active players on matters of climate change is also not helpful. It must come from the heart of all our people in all sectors that again as Parliament we must then say what is our role in respect of climate change, getting to know what are the sectors doing, not only sectors that find themselves in the public domain, but sectors that find themselves in the private domain as well. We need to know what are the private sector industries doing, either in agriculture, either in transport, either in energy, in all sectors of our economy, mining, what are they doing for us to realize our long-term scenarios of peaking, plateauing, and climbing on greenhouse gas emissions. So we need to have those conversations. By the way, we have not had those conversations as this committee with even those actors, with those players, except when we're preparing for Paris 2015. But it should be a normal conversation that we have with South Africans. Again, we should be speaking to cities. What is their engagement on matters of the climate? How do they contribute in policy and programmatic methodology in reducing greenhouse gas emissions in their own states? So, therefore, as a portfolio committee, we'll have to engage with those structures of our local governments. Now, you know, having said this, one area again, in my view, colleagues, that we also need to take into account, matters of environment by their very nature are cross-cutting. They cannot be a sole responsibility of the Portfolio Committee of Environmental Affairs. How do we create a framework here in Parliament that makes us to cooperate and collaborate with other portfolio committees? If we are to talk of reduction of greenhouse gas emissions, we can't do that on our own without speaking to those who deal with energy, without speaking to the portfolio committee that deals with mining, portfolio committee that deals with transport, emissions from our cars, portfolio committee that deals with agriculture, among others. There are many others, but I think these are the most important portfolio. How do we create then that framework where as a portfolio committee on environmental affairs, we are able to link up with these other portfolio committees on matters relating to climate change and the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions? That is one area where we need collaboration. So our program must fit. But the other area where we need collaboration, colleagues and comrades, sorry, if there are no comrades in the house, sorry, but if there are comrades, you are most welcome. As colleagues will know, another area where we are expected to come with clear and elaborate policy, but implementation of such policy resides elsewhere. Fighting crime or pipeline crime or biodiversity crime, as we would call it. And in it, we don't have police, we might have our green scorpions, but for us to make effective outputs from this broad area of fighting biodiversity crime, we need to work with other factors, your intelligence, your SANGF, your South African police services, and any other structures that our constitution has given the task of fighting any crime, including wildlife crime. Therefore, it is only in our interest for us as a committee of parliament to create this framework, and a framework that parliament must appreciate, that we cannot work in isolation from one another. So, therefore, as parliament, we must then say, how do we work with other portfolio committees, this legislature, and how do we put the importance of the work that we are doing in the area in which they work, in their own HPs, so that we all speak the same language, whether we don't run a portion, indeed the language must be the same between our portfolio committee and the portfolio committee of police, portfolio committee on the South African National Defense Force, portfolio committee on intelligence, etc. But the structure and the framework of how parliament works so far has not taken into heart that we need this collaboration. How do we instill that culture as this portfolio committee? And we will hope that when we conclude, we will be very much clear that this is what we are going to do to instill the culture. Another area in passing that one we touched on, you know, we had the Parliament of the Republic of South Africa. This Parliament is comprised of two houses, the National Assembly as a house and the National Capital of Provinces as a house. So it's these two houses that then forms what is in our democracy known as the Parliament of the Republic of South Africa. We have not had, as this portfolio committee on environment, any meaningful interaction with the NCOP select committee that also deals with matters of environment. To an extent where indeed we have serious duplications. We have the department on budget process having to come to the NA, present a budget speech through the minister or the deputy minister, then go again to the NCOP, present such a speech, hopefully a tweak to serve the NCOP. But broadly, the basis for such a speech remains the same. The same budget is the same state of the nation addressed by our president, but it's the same programs that are in the department, the same human resource that we have in the department that must undertake the programs of the department. So broadly, we speak on the same issue, the same CFNA, by the way. We speak on the same issues in the NA as we engage with the department on the budget. Of course, the department, as you know, the administration has got offices in Pretoria. They then have to come here to engage with the National Assembly. After they engage with us, they leave to Pretoria or Tshwane, then come back again on the same issues to engage with the National Council of Provinces. I can tell you, colleagues, if we were to continue in this fashion and think that we'll get better results, then there is something wrong with us. That's what Lamb Science has said. Something seriously wrong with us. So we are then saying, this learning session must at least come up with ideas of how do we ensure collaborative working with the National Council of Provinces. I just mentioned one area of work. Another one area of work, we take oversight visits to an area called Isimangaliso. This week or this month, and the following week or following month, the SAOP chief takes in visit to the same area, Isimangaliso. I'm just making Isimangaliso as an example. This is the time in real life. And when they come there, they say, we are from the national parliament. We all say the same thing. We are from the national parliament. Now, Isimangaliso must leave everything that they are doing to focus on this wonderful parliamentary visit. I esteem the parliamentarians. And do the same a week later. I think I'd also be annoyed if I was in Isimangaliso, or if I was at Kruger, or I was at Source, or I was at Tandi. I would equally be annoyed that, you know, you have these members of parliament. Can they coordinate at least come together? Or don't they have the capacity? Maybe we should assist them with their capacity. But it has nothing to do with their capacity. It has everything to do with how parliament has worked over 21 years. And my own view, colleagues and friends, is that we need to change the culture of working. This learning session must assist us in changing the culture of working without undermining the work of the NCOP as informed by the Constitution and without undermining the work of the NA as informed by our Constitution as well. And in my view, it is possible. And if we work in a collaborative manner with the NCOP and ourselves, we are more likely to get better results. And we are more likely to even get from our colleagues in the NCOP how our province is doing in terms of its concurrent function called environment. So that again we are able to plan together, but not only provinces, but even our own municipalities. How are they faring on this area of concurrent function called environment? And as you know, when it comes to air quality monitoring and the implementation of our laws and regulations, we as NA have found that our local authorities still have a lot to do. And these are things that we can share with the NCOP in these settings, so that even as they visit provinces during their provincial week, as they visit their municipalities, they have the sense of what our take is on the responsibility of the local authorities and provinces in implementation of our Air Quality Act and regulations and standards. So, colleagues, this then says to just put these broad guidelines. There are other people that we also, as a sector, need to interact with. We have NGOs and CPOs and a body of academics whose work is centered around environment. In our program as Parliament of the People, we are also their Parliament. We need to find a way of getting them to come and engage with us on their thinking, on how do we move South Africa in the area of the environment, so that their thinking also informs our interaction with our departments. So I just wanted to make these few reflections as we start with our wonderful meeting, where we will not be asking how far have you gone, what are you planning, but broadly, what should we see from the department at least for the year, and what are these high-level things that we are expected to see for the year, so that it then allows and empowers us to say what are the areas of oversight that we will put into space to ensure that you deliver on these high-level things that you speak to us today. So you'll also realize, colleagues, that One thing that we should thank you for as a department is that when some of us came here in 2014, we knew nothing about this thing called environment and something called El Nino. What is this El Nino? We will read about it and see if it's vumu-vumu somewhere in America. Because that's vumu-vumu El Nino. That is El Nino. We knew nothing about this thing called climate change. We knew that UK, there's something called global warming. At times we didn't even know the difference between the two or how they impact on one another. We didn't know anything about how or what we are doing to deal with things called invasive species. We got that from a wonderful talk when we came here. So, you know, there are certain things called invasive. They invent these things. Invasive species. You know. And I'm just in a dramatic way showing you how much we have left. In the few years we've been here, and deliberately, we did not have a planning session in 2014 because we would not know what is it that's planning. We needed to understand the sector, and that was part of our plan. That we'll be engaging with you. Because we even called you just to come and tell us, what is this ocean and coast management? What are you managing? So that we have a sense of what we have to offer us. You also came to tell us, what is this thing called biodiversity? What is it? Very big words. You need to take a dictionary and Oxford one to understand what is biodiversity. But we've got to know that we are a third most biodiverse country in the world, after Brazil and another Indonesia. So, again, we have learned a lot from the first. But learning by its very nature is continuous. Therefore, these members must learn and learn, and even be in terms of oversighting environmental matters, the experts in this area of work. So that again, what we need when we engage with experts, when we engage with academics, when we engage with our people, you don't get to be an expert when you engage only with experts. You also get to be an expert when you engage with people who are impacted upon by the environment. What it means to them where they live. As ordinary South Africans. Therefore, we also need to engage with ordinary South Africans so that the learning continues. Colleagues, having said that, let's welcome all of you. I know now that I don't know who's going to now speak, because it was supposed to be the minister, and I hope that the deputy minister will now speak. I'm told that there is also a plenary. This is just a housekeeping matter. There is a plenary in the afternoon. If we are not done by 1 o'clock, if we have to continue after 2, we might be interrupted to go to the house to do something. I know that there is a revenue division bill that is before us. So we might be interrupted to go and vote. And I just hope that my friend, and other friends in this committee, there are 2 friends besides. The other friend comes and leaves me alone, but he's here today. Shemile, most welcome. There are 2 friends who are always here, a friend of mine, Honorable Member Stewart, and Honorable Member Pumane. I hope that when it comes to voting, we'll go together as friends. Honourable Deputy Minister, thank you very much. The platform is us.
Thank you, Chair. The poor chair is lobbying. good morning to you, Chair, and members of the Portfolio Committee. Good morning to our officials as well. Chair, the department's priorities are outlined in what should be presented by the the DG. Just to say that we all hope and know that what is going to be presented should be informed by the state of the mission address, and it should also attempt to implement the NDP, that is National Development Plan. And also while attempting to implement all of this, we need to make sure that our planet is protected as well as its resources. That is what becomes key to us as this department. But also we should take note that all what is being said today, at the end, all the work that is to be done should speak to this strategic workshop. Now, DG, I think there is a need then to, for all of us as a department, as the portfolio committee, there is a need for us to make it a point that as we implement all of these, we check ourselves now and then whether we are still on the right track. And that then calls for us, and this I say to you, DG, that to come up with some measuring tool or some guiding tool that will always bring us back to check when we get out of line. Otherwise, if we don't come up with this tool, we could not achieve what we are saying today. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister, for those very kind and lofty advices to all of us. We will now hand over to the Director General to speak to us.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, DM, and to all of the members, good morning. I'll run through the presentation that conceptualizes the review of the Department's strategic plan and the annual plan of annual performance plan for 2016-17. As outlined by the Deputy Minister, the Department's strategic plan and the annual performance plan is outlined or at least attempts to implement the NDP, and it is aligned with the medium-term strategic framework, which is linked to the term of government currently from 2014 to 2019 in terms of the period. But we then review the annual plans based on a number of factors. And one of those factors, we do take into account the nominal scan, which is about the state of the economy, as well as the state of the environment, as well as the social status of the society. And in undertaking that scan, quite stuck with the macroeconomic environment and what was outlined as possible impact was what was presented and discussed at the cabinet of Kutla in February, February this year before the State of the Nation address. And in essence, that slide then outlines that question which indicates that the global economic environment is currently not so favorable or it is unfavorable for the implementation of the National Development Plan based on the fact that the global economy grew by between around 3%, 2.4%, and that also includes the countries that are trading with South Africa, which is what we refer to as South Africa's main trading partners, which also experienced divergent growth, in particular the European Union, which grew at about 0.9%, Japan shrunk in essence by 0.1%, and sub-Saharan Africa grew by 5%, and the United States grew by 2.4%. And the U.S. is coming from deflation. They've been growing at negative digits in the past, and in this recent past year, they've seen a positive growth. So their negative growth was since 2008, and similarly also with the other countries, based on the international financial crisis that was taking place in the world. China continues to slow down in terms of growth. It was moderating around 7.4%, coming from around 10% previously. So still it is in positive growth in that regard. Commodity prices, because we are a country that exports most of our minerals, and our exports then are very much dependent on what the prices, the global prices are. And commodity prices of iron ore, coal, platinum and oil were below the 2008 levels, and we had a boom in the 2008, and where the country was enjoying quite good figures in respect of exports of minerals. And that area in terms of minerals is still reflected to have a slow growth. There was a substantial drop in the international oil prices, which brought some benefits to South Africa because we're a net importer of oil. However, that meant that our trading partners in the African country, in the African continent, would experience reduced growth. And mostly those are the countries where our South African manufactured exports are normally enjoying growth in. Our overall global outlook is still then uncertain in respect of GDP projections. The IMF has given projections that have been revised downwards globally for most countries, and including South Africa. Therefore, the cabinet reporter was then took the stance that South Africa cannot depend on global growth alone. It needs to refocus its economic strategy towards catalyzing domestic growth. The next slide, we then hear the earlier slide was focusing on the global economy. Now coming back home, just in terms of the performance of the South African economy, we were said to be the lowest growth performers in the world, because as a country, last year or the last financial year, we grew by around 1.5%. And if we then look at the sectors that contributed to that GDP growth, mainly agriculture, there was an improvement in terms of agriculture growth by about 5.6%. Services sector, which also includes tourism and the hospitality sector, grew by 2.1%, while the mining sector shrunk by 1.6%, and the manufacturing sector was flat. There was no increase or decrease in the last year. Unemployment was highest again when we compare South Africa to the other emerging markets, whether you compare ourselves to Brazil, Colombia, and Hungary, Poland, and even India. We were projected to grow at around 2 digits. The reason that was given that the country ended up at about 1.5% growth was also attributed to not so favorable labor environment. In the last year there were quite significant labor shortages and also electricity shortages. In the current year, the projections of GDP growth are below 1%. And therefore, all these, as you also heard from both the State of the Nation Address and the Minister of Finance budget vote, clearly the government balance sheet has deteriorated and there's limited room for maneuvering, both in terms of providing some of the services at the level at which we've been funded previously. The government's debt has approached 2 trillion rands, and when you then look at a debt to GDP, which is normally a measure of whether you would be able to service your debt over time, it was almost peaking at about 45%. And this has been the growth of debt from about 25% to GDP in 2008 to where we are now. So those factors, honourable members, then are what characterizes the economic environment and the affordability of the state. And the country has to start servicing at about 80 billion rand and the borrowings in respect of our debt over the next 5 years. And food prices have been rising. We've experienced serious drought, which is related to El Nino. The chairperson spoke about the El Nino effect, which is affecting, which is the warming of the Pacific, affecting the southern Africa as well as Australia. The above inflation wage agreement in public sector last year, the negotiations ended up with a certain level of increase that resulted in another commitment of about 60 billion rand on top of the salary bill of the state. And currently for the department, the context is important because our budget is then being revised. Our ability to then still have ambitious targets in terms of our ADP is going to be impacted by that state. So already there is a presentation here, honourable members, that outlines our budget cut. We received the budget cut of 60 million for 2016-17. 114.9 for 2017-18, 155 million for 2018-19. And on compensation of personnel, our salary bill is cut next year by 54.9 million, which is almost 60 million, and then 85.2 million. In 2018-19. So this then is interesting even on the staff that is already appointed in the establishment. And we are awaiting a cabinet memo which DPSA has indicated that they will issue it in April for the department, all government departments, not to fill posts except certain defined critical posts in terms of OFB, but that memo has not yet, we are waiting and are expecting it. And we then have to think about what is it going to mean for the department to then have to reduce the budget and cut on compensation in the future. On environmental scheme, we measure ourselves in terms of what we need to be focusing on in respect of our priorities based on some of the work that is done by, through an independent process, the South African Environmental Outlook, both the 2006 Outlook and the 2012 Outlook, the 2013 Environmental Performance Report that was compiled by the OECD, which is the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. All of those reviews are pointing to an overall deterioration in the state of the environment. And therefore, we need to take into account the specific contributors to that deterioration of the environment. One, South Africa is one of the most energy-intensive and carbon intensive economies of the world or in the world. We have over reliance on natural resources, particularly the mines, the minerals, and we come from a history of a poor regulation of the mining industry, which has resulted on serious environmental damages like the acid mine drainage and some of the asbestos, secondary asbestos pollution, which we have presented to the committee, and the report was presented to the committee previously. We have high pressures on limited water resources. South Africa is a water-scarce country. We are in the semi-arid region, and certainly we have to continue to look at managing our water resources prudently. The poor environmental quality and access to environmental services, in particular sanitation, waste collection services, and sustainable human settlements, that have an effect on the health and health of citizens, especially the youth or the children. And increasing illegal activities, illegal environmental crimes, and we have experienced with illegal poaching of and wildlife trade, and our other challenges that are related to damage that is caused by invasive species on landscapes and biodiversity, and also on impacting negatively on our water resources. A slowing down in growth following the global economic crisis, which I've already outlined, has exacerbated unemployment challenges of our country. Inequalities have somewhat widened, our life expectancy is outlined to be 2/3 of the OECD average. That is more than we are being compared with developed countries. Now, honourable members, you don't have the slide. I've just added the slide before I come to respond to the challenges. Just to sum up what our outcome objectives are, given the desired national development and outcomes for radical social economy transformation and transition to a low carbon economy, and also bearing in mind that the sector, environment sector, needs to grow in its contribution to social economic challenges of the country and improve and facilitate social transformation in respect of our contribution to reducing poverty, hunger, and education, health, and gender inequality. We then have direct priorities for the sector, which are also outlined in what we call Outcome 10, which is what we share as priorities across the provinces, national and provinces. We have 4 intersecting environment and sustainable development objectives. 1, the related ecosystem management, most of our conservation work, as well as the contribution of the work of our entities, particularly is the Biodiversity Institute and Center and Simangaliso, and then on research of ecosystem services and resource use. Here again, this is where we focus on how we then support the work of other departments like water and sanitation, and also the target of agriculture, forestry and fisheries when it relates to land productivity and carbon sinks. And we then also having a focus on managing land degradation, which threatens our ecosystem services, including the work that relates to environmental impact management, greenhouse gas reduction, and reducing air pollution, controlling invasive species, and so on. And lastly, we have then an outcome that's focused on optimizing the core benefits as they relate to the social transformation indicators of jobs, skills, and sustainable livelihoods, and growth in the economic sense. Next slide. And honourable members, then we then have taken from the environmental challenges, we have the column that repeats problem statement, and then we then say what is then the critical sector outcomes and outputs. In respect of the fact that South Africa is the world's largest carbon dioxide emitter, at the time with number 12, and I don't quite know what where we will end up this year considering the sluggish growth and so on, largely due to our dependence on fossil fuels, particularly coal, and which contributes or at least makes up in terms of the energy mix, three quarters of our primary energy supply is coming from the coal resource, and over 90% of electricity generation. South Africa ranks among the 20th biggest greenhouse gas emitter, and our stratospheric ozone depletion, we talk about the layer of the atmosphere where we are not supposed to have sun rays penetration, and that then causes the ultraviolet radiation that remains dangerous, especially during summer, and that, honourable members, is linked to skin, that can cause skin cancers to the citizens of the country. So we have some level of exposure in that regard. And then our critical response in terms of what we would then measure as outputs relates to reduction of emissions of carbon dioxide to mitigate the catastrophic impacts of climate change. It is therefore imperative that, consistent with our international obligations, we would, as a country, stick to the commitment that has already been made by a president on behalf of cabinet of us, the country, transitioning to at least get to lower our emissions to about 24% by 2020 and 42% by 2025, and therefore peak and plateau and decline beyond 2030. Our renewable energy deployment program, which is led by the Department of Energy, here again, in terms of the outcome chain, we're looking at increasing the percentage of power generation that comes from renewable sources of energy, considering that we do have an opportunity with our abundance of sun as well as wind as a country. Adapting to impacts of climate change, here we then have outputs that relate to the development and implementation of adaptation plans by key sector departments of the economy, particularly water sector, the forestry sector, the biodiversity sector, tourism sector, culture, human settlements, land and social development, including fisheries and rural development. On air pollution, better than to the left side, air pollution which results in the exposure to unsafe ambient pollutant concentrations which have associated health effects, as honourable members already have had an opportunity to appreciate that poor air quality can cause harm to the health of people, to the health of the citizens of our country, especially in areas that lead to respiratory diseases and waterborne diseases like cholera. Air quality in low-income dense settlements where citizens are still relying on burning coals for heating, as well as even using paraffin for paraffin stoves or heaters for warming and also even cooking purposes. And in respect of our critical sector output, we're looking at reduction of atmospheric pollutants in order to ensure that there is a progressive realization of that outcome that is enshrined in the Constitution in terms of people, everyone having the right to air that is not harmful to the health and well-being of South African citizens. And again, some of the members, this is where, in terms of our APP, we will then have some progressive reduction targets in respect of the pollutants that would have to be in compliance with the ambient air quality standards by 2020. As you recall, we had proposed or received applications for postponement for some of the industries that could not meet the ambient air quality standards, and therefore they faced compliance programs that they have to embark upon, so they have to meet by 2020, and will then be able to measure whether we are then making that progress that we anticipate over time. Next slide. On the left again, the poor environmental quality and access to environmental services, especially or specifically waste services. Again, earlier on, what I omitted to mention is that these are areas where we have concurrence with province and municipality, air quality management and waste provision of services in the main. But there's also hazardous waste management, which is a national concurrence with province, as well as healthcare risk waste, and the management of mine dumps in terms of making sure that the leachate does not cause harm to the soils and groundwater resources. We also have the challenge of dealing with licensing of landfill sites and make sure that even those that are licensed, there is compliance to the conditions that are outlined in the license to make sure that there is prevention or limited pollution. And on the right-hand side, here we have better outputs that lead to less and better waste management. And we seek to make sure that solid waste management and waste minimization is improved, particularly the collection and also even at least reducing what goes to the disposal site or landfill site by diverting the various waste streams to recycling and focus on extended producer responsibility as it is outlined in the waste legislation. We will also have an output that is focusing on landfill sites, number of landfill sites, or the percentage that should increase in terms of permitting, so that most of the landfill sites meet the standards in terms of their management. Then impact on mining activities to the environment and natural resources. Here we've had, as I indicated earlier on, a public statement related to the fact that we've had a poorly regulated mining area, which is more environmental governance of the mining areas, mining activities. We've had amendments in law, both environmental legislation and the MPRDA, Mine Development, Mining and Petroleum Development Act, which amendment legislation is still in Parliament, the President of Federal Parliament. It's very important for that legislation to be processed in Parliament so that it triggers the uniformity, or at least the one environmental system that we purport to develop, working between the three departments, particularly the Mineral Resources Department and Water and Sanitation and Environmental Affairs. So our other focus in respect of the outputs relates to the fact that the abundant derelict and ownerless mines would have to be rehabilitated looking Bennett, looking at that holistic list of ownerless and derelict mines, working with the Department of Mineral Resources, and make sure that partly these employment creation programs to do the rehabilitation, but the master resources to facilitate, and some technologies that could be used to rehabilitate those mining areas. And over and above that, we have discussions, or at least there has been an agreement with the mining guidelines that was agreed to by the mining sector, the Chamber of Mines, and the Department of Mineral Resources on areas of high environmental value or importance, where we should, or what we normally classify as sensitive environment, where they should be limited mining, or even where the Minister of Mineral Resources can prohibit mining activities. We hope then that would be able to still then implement a coherent and aligned integrated regulatory system during the this new financial year and going into the future. On land degradation and soil erosion, which honorable members undermines the productive potential of land and threatens the local resource base upon which our rural communities and livelihoods depend on. We are, in terms of statistics, at least over 0.7 million or 0.7 million hectares of land is degraded and left bare because of soil erosion, and when there are winds, the dust that comes out of that is also not good in terms of the particulate matter. We have an estimation of about 9,000 plant species that were introduced to South Africa, of which 151 of those plant species are deemed to be invasive, and they cover almost 10% of the South African land surface. We have not given the figure on the oceans, because again there are fish species that also have invasive, and they still work that the country is involved in order to be able to quantify those into the future. Again, our critical sector outputs relate to sustainable land use management, and therefore working with various government departments and sector departments, we need to scale up intervention towards managing land degradation, and therefore in terms of the United Nations Convention on Desertification, move towards land degradation neutrality. Sustaining biodiversity and ecological processes, with only 22% of the terrestrial system types well protected and 5% completely unprotected. So we have a situation where we have a network of protected areas in the country. We have an expansion strategy where we need to add more land under conservation, including part of the sea in respect of marine protected areas. So that is also subject to us having resources to then buy that land and incorporate it within the national parks establishment, or even provincial parks establishment. So a function of the conservation estate then is to ensure that we use this land under conservation. That would include stewardship sites, and what then I mean with those stewardship sites is in the context of the implementation of the wildlife economy strategy, where even communities could then fence off areas and stock them both with plants that are indigenous and also with wildlife, and those would then contribute to the conservation and a program of government, or at least of our country. protected ecosystems and species in order to preserve our biodiversity and protected ecosystems and species. The number of species under formal protection should increase, and the proportion of species threatened with extinction should decline from the current levels of 6.5%. So again, this is an area where we will be able to say when in future from our APP, this is how much we are reducing the proportion of species threatened with extinction over time. In the next area of wetlands loss, honorable members, it is estimated that more than 50% of the original wetland areas in our country have been lost or at least degraded. And we have 65% of the wetland types that have been identified as threatened, and 48% are critically endangered. So even with wetlands, we know what a pristine wetland looks like, what a degraded wetland looks like, and those that are completely lost, even with the interventions of rehabilitating them. And then saying that in respect of that problem statement, we also have to remember that our floodplain wetlands have the highest proportion of the critically endangered ecosystems. So we would have to then begin part of which is very much about education around unsustainable farming practices, because some of those wetlands were canalized for irrigation purposes and so on, and based on that then they have lost their ability to function optimally. We are then saying in terms of the sector outputs, we would have to make sure that the formal protection and restoration and rehabilitation of wetlands, that must be strengthened. We know that we already have a program that is called Working for Wetlands, and some of the planning work and research work on the state of the wetlands would also be carried forward. And the honourable members, these are very important systems in our water, fresh water system. They serve as regulators of water flow, preventing erosion of our fresh water systems, and making sure that we have fresh water that we can drink without having to put chemicals in treating them. High pollution levels around coastal metropolitan areas, again, this is more direct, that also relates to estuaries, the state of the estuaries, the state of the beaches. In most of our most coastal municipalities have outflow pipelines that take sewer into the sea, as well as also there has been sources, land-based sources of pollution that bring microplastics to the coastal and ocean environment, which then poses threats to marine life and also to the quality of our coastal waters. The exploitation of marine resources continues to expand in ways that are not always predictable. Again, fishery function is a responsibility of the Department of Agriculture, Coast and Fisheries. This is an area where the Department of Environmental Affairs needs to strengthen its cooperation with staff. And therefore, in our outputs, we're focusing on the conservation, expansion of the conservation estate, inshore both, and offshore marine protected areas. We hope that the minister has already signed off some of the areas where we need to declare marine protected areas, and following public participation processes, then those will be confirmed. We also have an output that's focusing on pollution abatement strategy, and part of which will relate to creation of awareness on the impact of microplastics to marine life, so that people that stay along the coast and also the people that are users of this, those small boats and big boats and ships should then be able to manage and use better practices to prevent pollution, especially from microplastics. Our Coast Care program, we're working for the Coast program in coastal municipalities, would strengthen and particularly expand into the area of coastal water quality monitoring program, and that would also be linked to an enhanced partnership with the Department of Tourism, in particular through the Blue Flag Beach program, which is about a beach that is managed according to international standards. And we have some of those beaches that are more pristine in our country, and our water quality meet those international standards, and we seek to then expand that way. That's all. Next slide. On research, again, this is an area where we're putting emphasis on the importance of the research and link to the policy implementation, which is what we refer to as science policy interface, because our policies at times are research based, but then you need evidence that when you implement, you still then get the outcomes that you would want to get. If not, then there must be a further scientific work that need to embed that work. So we're looking at working with higher education institutes. We have some agreements already with Nelson Mandela University, with UCT, with a few others and other science councils in respect of that. Next slide. On drought, all the members, again, I think at the last sitting, we reflected a bit on what the work that's being undertaken by key departments of water, agriculture, human settlements, and also ourselves as the Department of Environmental Affairs with our entity, which is the South African Weather Services. And we say that there has been, in terms of water, significant proportions of allocation of water resources, those sentences are not full yet, and which makes, as a country which is in a semi-arid region, for future demands, it's difficult to give new allocations of water use permits or permitting water uses without also changing what you've already provided, both in terms of water for irrigation, water for industrial development, water for ecosystem services. And therefore, there is a greater focus now on us as a country looking at water that's available for storage. When we have drought conditions, we have got limited storage, or your storage is gradually reduced because you don't have any flow of water into those dams where you have dams. So under extreme drought conditions, we as a country, there are areas where we are already faced with water scarcity and shortages, and that then impacts agriculture in respect of growing food, and whether it's maize or other crops, and therefore that has got other implications in respect of food security, especially for small scale farmers, which is where as the Department of Environmental Affairs we are also involved in respect of work or research work on crops that would withstand dry conditions. And on human health, again, there are strong interactions with environmental quality and related disease burdens, which relate to those extreme weather events. And disaster management, the work of the Weather Service helps with early warning, but we need to then have resilient ecosystems that can help to then sustain and be able to protect citizens from those conditions. And human settlements and livelihoods, again, the settlements can be planned better going into the future. Next slide. Honourable members, our work does not just only end with national programs. We then have a big element that is focusing on multilateral engagement in respect of the multilateral environmental conventions. And last year, the department made a presentation to the portfolio committee on the outcomes of the United Nations General Assembly in respect of the Sustainable Development Goals. And we have also considered the link in respect of what data requirements are we going to have in terms of to have managed in respect of the reports against the implementation of the 17 advanced design targets for the SDGs. And the United Nations Convention on to Combat Desertification had a conference of parties last year, also in October, in Ankara, Turkey. And again, this is where there is also a link between the outcomes of the UN General Assembly in respect of the SDG that deals with land degradation and management of ecosystems, and the goal is to make sure that we reach land degradation neutrality in 20 years. I can't remember now the time frame. COP21 took place in Paris last year. You will receive a presentation on UNCCD from Shoni, the DGG for Biodiversity. Honourable members, there is a presentation on COP21 outcomes by Judy Beaumont, and then the chemical meeting of parties will have a separate presentation in future. Conventional Trade in Endangered Species, which is CITES COP, which we are hosting in September this year in South Africa. Again, there is a separate presentation that you will receive as per the program. And lastly, also on the Convention on Biodiversity Conference of Parties that is taking place in Cancun in November, December. Shoni will also make that separate presentation. So our ATP then takes into account some of these multilateral agreements, and there are also bilateral agreements which have not elaborated on. The next slide, honourable members, just to remind you, or just as a refresher, we did outline the key elements of the SDGs, that we had 17 goals with about 159 targets, which cross cuts to between economic targets, social targets, and also environmental related targets. And from a developing country perspective, the SDGs, that outcome, we are proud of it because it's for development and it does focus on ending poverty, achieving shared prosperity, and protecting our planet, as the Deputy Minister outlined when she introduced the presentation. A political commitment to end poverty and hunger everywhere. So these are the elements of that political commitment: building a peaceful world which is just and inclusive, and also protecting human rights and promoting gender equality, and in particular the empowerment of women and girls, ensuring the lasting protection of the planet and its natural resources. And we then have to consider our members in terms of our current policies and regulations, or our regulatory framework. SDGs have also necessitated that we have a reflection on the implementation opportunities and challenges, and therefore we are then revisiting some of our legislative program and what we have in place and what can be further streamlined. And we do need to answer the question on SDGs when we report on those 17 goals and whatever number of targets would end up being, what will be the evidence that we will use as a nation to reflect on the progress that we are making towards the achievement of those goals. Next slide. Out of the 17 goals, honorable members, goals 12 to 15 are focusing on environment, ensuring sustainable consumption and production patterns, which talks to the implementation of our green economy strategy or green growth strategy, taking urgent action to combat climate change and its impacts. Again, here we have a clear program. Conservation and sustainability, or sustainable use of the oceans, our seas and marine resources for sustainable development, both the Ocean Economy Program and the program that is led by the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries on fisheries and aquaculture development would then contribute to that. Protect, restore and promote sustainable use of terrestrial ecosystems and sustainably manage forests. Combat desertification and halt and reverse land degradation and halt biodiversity loss. These are all then what I mentioned earlier in terms of our separate presentations are covered and they covered well in our APP. We are now busy with the implementation plan to give effect to the SDGs. Next slide. Addressing the challenges related to the scarcity of natural resources, environmental degradation, pollution, invasive species and climate change, whilst ensuring socio-economic benefits for communities. I think what we our posture to this honourable member is that we need to re-engineer consciousness that catalyzes changes in attitudes, in behaviors, and in investment decisions of the private sector in relation to water uses. It is possible that citizens and government or private sector, when making purchasing decisions for water devices or even energy equipment, they need to be looking for water-efficient devices to ensure that we advance the water conservation campaign. Similarly, on energy efficiency campaign, and which is more a program or a campaign about wise use of resources. And we have a lot to contribute to that as a sector, promoting, for instance, rainwater harvesting, recycling of wastewater, and make sure that we also move away from being a throwaway society in respect of our waste. We look at options of recycling and limiting what is taken to landfill sites. There are other waste prevention possibilities that we are exploring in terms of composting and also reuse where it is possible. Next slide. Honourable members, as I approach the end of my presentation, we then, having taken all of these problem statements and what we think we should achieve as a sector, we then have a department, because part of our of this work is also what we coordinate with provinces. And the department's strategic direction then seeks to respond to the identified pressures, the commitments that would take into consideration what opportunities exist. For instance, we are a country that prides itself with rich biodiversity and exceptional ecosystems and habitats. We have abundance of non-renewable energy in the form of sun and wind, and mineral resources, and in fact, our ocean currents, which we have not yet quite explored, offshore wind energy. We have at least implemented the Department of Energy have been implementing a fast-growing renewable energy area, and we have a market in the both in G20, and we are one of the leaders of the world in this regard in respect of clean energy investments. And we have green growth opportunities from wildlife economy strategy in respect of game farming, ecotourism, and so on. We do have opportunities in respect of energy efficiency, water efficiency measures, and other innovations in respect of technology growth to advance, for instance, waste stream recycling, and we can also use technological innovation in respect of our climate change response. South Africa has a comprehensive policy, environment, I'm talking now about the environmental sector, and also we do have a legislative framework that is reasonably sufficient to protecting the environment and managing the damage to natural resources. The critical part is to implement and make sure that our partners in government, in society, in private sector are able to then execute and implement the laws that are in existence. Now, if we're then to talk about our strategy map, which is outcome-based, in a nutshell, with this flow diagram, we can say that our APP on our strategic plan is responsive to the challenges that I've already outlined. Our vision of a prosperous and equitable society living in harmony with its natural resources links well with the vision in respect of the National Development Plan, which is a transition to society and economy which is internationally competitive, sustainable, and equitable. Then when it comes to the key outcomes that we've outlined as a department, we have four areas. It's the economic, environmental economic contribution that we can optimize, ecological environmental integrity, as well as socially transformed and transitioned economies. And then we have a key a focus area on global agenda where we influence and also comply with multilateral obligations and even bilateral arrangements. So we have a suite of programs and activities that contribute to growth in industries that depend on environmental services, ecosystem services, as well as improvement in respect of access to benefits that arise from our ecosystems. And we then have set our agenda as a department in terms of our internal strategic objectives through those areas that are outlined in that level, in that middle, towards the middle, towards the end block, where we talk about strengthening knowledge, science and policy interface, in order for us to then make sure that we've got a robust knowledge base, and we again will continue to step up alignment and coherence of our regulatory system with clear decision support systems and mechanisms, and very focused funding arrangements in terms of how we resource the programs and the sub-programs and the areas where we're going to be able to realize the outcomes that we seek to realize. And we will build a culture of sustainability where we improve the profile and capacity of the sector, and we would also focus on key areas of improving compliance with environmental legislation. In our coordination and monitoring aspects, we would then seek to foster effective partnerships and cooperative governments and work with our local government through our local government support program, and we would enhance sector monitoring and evaluation overall using our MINTEC or MINMEP system. Lastly, honorable members, All of that, what I was mentioning then, is to make sure that we achieve synergies and effectiveness and efficiencies. And within the organization, we then have people that must work and make sure that the results are delivered. And the people capability will then be achieved through all the things that we do to secure a harmonious and a conducive working environment, starting from buildings and scaling and as well as information technologies that are an enabler to deliver of our services. We have then programs, honorable members, as you know, six programs. Program one, where we then say how we are going to, what are priorities for each of the programs to then towards the implementation and achievement of those outputs and outcomes. So program one, which is administration, very much covering local government support, our intergovernmental relations, and communications and awareness programs. Program two, which is legal authorizations, compliance and enforcement. Again, here we have clear indicators that relate to how we are going to beef up our capacity for the environmental management inspectorate in respect of municipalities, how we're going to step up fighting crime or environmental crimes and make sure that we enforce compliance and a review of our legislation and make sure that our legislative program takes us to that next level where it is more alignment and limited duplication, and especially if we are going to have reduced capacity in terms of people that we can appoint to the establishment of the organization. Program three on oceans and coast response to all the matters that relate to what our client on estuaries, coastal management, and improving pollution and preventing pollution of coastal waters. And then climate change and air quality, which is program four. Again, here we're focusing on the National Framework for Climate Services, drought measures and adaptation strategies, our climate change adaptation strategies, and our mitigation to climate change measures and implementation of the air quality provisions in terms of our laws. Program 5, the Biodiversity and Conservation Branch. Again, here we would focus more on the expansion of and effective management of the conservation estate, enhancing the management effectiveness of that conservation estate, and improving use of ecosystems and management of species, and how that benefits society and communities, and how we would then mitigate threats to biodiversity using various tools that are available in law. Next slide, program 6. Here, honorable members, again, we're going to be strengthening our work in respect of the environmental, environment and culture, the public employment programs, and building on opportunities of using the National Green Jobs Index to track the value of our interventions and how those advance the contribution of the sector to socio-economic prosperity. We would then also work on the program with DMR in respect of the rehabilitation of derelict and onerous mines, and coordinated integrated permitting system and screening tool to be used to facilitate decision making in respect of environmental authorizations, and how we then working at rationalizing and harmonizing the environmental regulatory system. Program 7, honorable members, is then again we will be advancing the work that facilitates recycling of waste streams, with a clear program on enterprise development and our, we would facilitate also additional industrial waste management plans for some of the other waste streams that are not yet covered beyond plastics and tires, which are important in terms of future management of waste in the country. Thank you very much, honourable members, that sets the outline of what's in our APP and what in 40 to
cents. Thank you very much, DG. I know that there are some issues that the department would also like to bring to our attention, issues of importance, including the hosting of scientists this year, among others, but also the issues of the outcomes, not necessarily implementation thereof, outcomes of Paris 2015, and also there is this biodiversity, and the land degradation conference. So why don't we allow you to? But again, I think colleagues and members of the National Assembly, broadly, we have a sense what we'll be dealing with and then. In this financial year, and probably in all the years. But of course, as portfolio committee members, we would like to drill down on where we are, and again, what are these achievements that we would like to achieve year on year, and that is covered in the HEP, which we won't go to, by the way, now, today. Because today we are dealing with the overall picture. In the high level future, except in these areas that we have just spoken to now, where all of us, as we deal with the overall future, we also know that there are these areas on biodiversity, there are these areas on climate change, and also these areas on land degradation. We will then, of course, with time also get to know what are the implementation measures on those broad areas that are in our multilateral table. I don't know which one I started with, DG.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, Shoni is coming to the front. She's going to deal with the biodiversity CBD. Which is the Convention on Biodiversity, and followed by the presentation on the UNCCD, which is the Convention on Desertification, and then the third one will be CITES, COP 17. You do three, let's put four, three. Then Judy will come in with the climate change. Thank you, over to you, Sean.
Thank you very much, DC, honourable members, Minister. The presentation on CBD will link up with the UNCBD at the end, meaning that in doing the CBD presentation, the last two slides will specifically focus on the land degradation one, specifically highlighting issues that we think are more important to take forward and with implications to sustainable development goals. Let me start with the Convention on Biological Diversity. We always call it CBD, but I will refer to it as the Biodiversity Convention. It's been there for quite a while, and it's one of those that we consider as key Rio conventions, one being UNFCCC that deals with climate change. This one focuses on biological diversity. The spirit of our Constitution, specifically Section 24, it's very much aligned to what this convention seeks to achieve. There are three key goals that need to be highlighted. Because if you check on the Constitution, we check on NEMBA, which is our biodiversity act here in South Africa, those three areas are what informed our legislation as well and our approach to conservation. Very, very important. One is that we need to conserve and protect our biodiversity. That's number one. The second issue is that there should be sustainable use of that which we have. Being a mega diverse country, as Chair indicated, we have a lot that we can benefit from sustainable utilization of these resources. The third issue deals with the beneficiation. This being our natural resources, there should be, in the use of these resources, fair and equitable sharing of the benefits that arise from this. I think there's a lot to learn from the mining sector, not to repeat the same mistakes. So even in this area, when we refer to biodiversity economy later on, as a strategy that we need to implement in South Africa, we need to make sure that the benefits accrued in the utilization of resources are shared fairly and equitably so. So there is there are meetings that are held on a regular basis, every 2 years. So there are COPs that talk to a number of things. This convention also has protocols that we are party to, or that we have ratified as South Africa. It's a protocol that deals with genetically modified organisms, GMO, we call it the Rahim Protocol on Biosafety. There's another one that also deals with, it's a supplementary one to the GMO one, that deals with the issues of liability and redress, just to ensure that the other country is not affected unduly by the others. There's another one that deals with fair and equitable sharing of resources. Can we move on to the next slide? I don't know who is pressing the button. Oh, yes, there we are. There is a COP that is coming in November, towards the end, from the 4th to the 14th of December in Mexico. And this COP is going to focus specifically on mainstreaming biodiversity. There will be a lot of things that are going to be discussed, which I will try and highlight quickly. But in South Africa, we are one of those countries that have developed what we call the National Biodiversity Strategy and Action Plan for the country. There are few other countries that have done that. So we do have a strategy that affects the implementation of the provisions of this, apart from the specific law that we have, as we refer to as NIMBA, there is a strategy. COP13, there are key issues that are going to be discussed today. One critically important issue focuses on the strategic goals that have been agreed upon. There's a vision 2050 has been agreed upon, but there are strategic goals with targets. I think there are 20 targets that have been set aside. And those targets talk to the call for addressing the causes of biodiversity loss and mainstreaming biodiversity. They call for species protection. They call for beneficiation, the issue that I was talking about, fair and equitable sharing of resources. They also call for partnerships and enhanced implementation through participatory mechanisms. And they also call for science policy interface. Science has to inform what we do as we implement all these things. So that will be a focus on how our countries dealing with these issues, and we are convinced that South Africa is doing well in this regard, especially if we go through each one of them. The other key issues relate to marine and coastal biodiversity. I think BG earlier on referred to marine and coastal issues, including marine protected areas. There's also a specific focus on protected areas and ecosystem restoration, so our protected area systems and the work that we're doing on rehabilitation of ecosystems will also be part of what we can share with others as part of our reporting. The issue of biodiversity and climate change is a big issue that's emerging and is growing. Climate change has implications to biodiversity and how that is done, and issues of adaptation related to biodiversity as well will also be discussed. There are political issues, if we move on to the next slide. Some of which are not local, but have international implications, especially the second one and first one. The strategic plan is there, but the technical support that's required by countries to implement will require resourcing. That's another issue that's on the agenda, to say how best to implement innovative measures and innovative ways to support countries in the implementation of biodiversity. I think our view, countries, is that biodiversity knows no borders. So cooperation, there are regional approaches, there are sub-regional approaches, but the technical and financial support that's required in that space as well by countries or support countries on specific areas. There are other countries, especially in our continent, African continent, that are not paying their annual dues. We do, but that also affects the work of the secretariat. When we say, please assist us with the assessment on this, then there's no funding to support some of those things. Do a synthesis report on this to inform us in decision making. Some of the things cannot be done or are delayed because of funding. The coordination of the Africa group is important, that we go with one voice. On issues that affect all of us as Africa, we have a lot to learn also from UNFCCC, the Climate Change Convention, on how Africa can work together and deal with issues of common interest. Things are growing in that area. There are areas that we don't agree with each other, but I think we can find each other by cooperating more. And also the issue of balancing sustainable use and conservation. This is one critical area. I think when we talk to scientists, it keeps on coming. There are countries that don't subscribe to the sustainable utilization approach. They just want any non-consumptive use. We subscribe to sustainable utilization and benefit arising from that. So that conflict, managing that is also an issue. If I may be allowed to use the two slides, Chair DG, to focus specifically on land degradation issues, the next slide. Without going in detail on the United Nations Convention to Combat Desertification, on where and how many countries are part of it, but specifically, as DG indicated, the last COP was held, COP 12, immediately after the United Nations declared or adopted the Sustainable Development Goals. There's a specific goal there, which is very important, Goal 50. It reads as follows: we need to protect, or parties need to protect, restore, promote sustainable use of terrestrial ecosystems, and sustainably manage forests, combat desertification, and halt and reverse land degradation and halt biodiversity loss. There's a specific target that's outlined as aligned to this goal. It says by 2030, we need to combat desertification, restore degraded land and soil, including land affected by desertification, drought and flood, and strive to achieve this part here. We call it land degradation neutral wells. It means that we need to do our best to restore the land that's degraded and prevent any further degradation. Land degradation neutral well doesn't mean that land is not utilized. It just means that we need to avoid land degradation and make sure that where land is going to be assigned to specific uses, there's also land that compensates for that. At the end of the day, the equation balances to zero. So that's what the countries should strive for. The fourth bullet there indicates that we need to shift from degrade, abandon, and migrate to what we call protect, sustain, and restore. What normally happens is that when land is degraded, people abandon it, and they migrate and move to other areas. And the same thing happens, and you end up with overall degradation, which is a problem. But we need to move to protect, sustain, restore. That's the approach that we need to take. So the targets will require a lot of things. Chair, you indicated that some of these things would require cooperation with the others, agriculture, public works, rural development, and many others working together in attaining this. That slide on land degradation. especially on land degradation neutrality as a concept. What is being called for and what has been acknowledged as part of this is that we need to employ land management or sustainable land management practices, but more so to acknowledge the last bullet there, that restoring the land and sustainable land management and land degradation in particular has implications to all of those things that are listed there. Land degraded compromises food security. There are implications to poverty alleviation programs. Land degraded, the degraded land compromises water resources, and many other opportunities that we may miss. So land degradation is not just on its own, but it links to everything else. It links to climate change. It also links to other efforts associated with socio-economic development. That's how far we can go on CBD and land degradation convention. If I move to the last presentation, that was society. Part of what Chair indicated was that we look at how we are implementing this. There are specific programs on land degradation. The work that our good daughter is doing on working for, in terms of rehabilitation and restoration is also part of that. There's work that agriculture is doing and rural development as well. And that we are working toward a finalizing and adopting a framework. In South Africa, we call it National Action Program for dealing with issues of land degradation in South Africa, which will provide a framework for bringing others on board. COP17, I'm looking now at a convention that is...
Colleagues, we will go to COP17, but here we will not deal with the nitty-gritties. What we should be able to get, as I was referring to my colleague here, Bob Makubela, that when we then make propositions on what we are going to do, there shouldn't be any area of work of the department that our framework does not touch on of oversighting. And then one area that we have not been able to do proper work on are these multilateral protocols and conventions. So we must then find a way of how do we keep our eyes on the ball in relation to these matters of multilateral concern. We will not go into details, but it's good that we know where we are so that we ourselves prepare ourselves as parliaments to interact with you on those. Even to drill down, what are you doing? What is the state of whatever area that you are dealing with as we speak?
Thank you very much, Chair. The South Africa is going to be hosting COP17 this time around, not for climate change. We did for climate change COP17 this time around on a convention that deals with trade in speed. We call it fashion. The way how CITES operate is that all these 182 countries that are party to CITES come together and they take decisions to say when it comes to species that are subjected to change, this is how the approach is going to be, this is how it's going to work. They categorize species into three categories. We call them appendices. Appendix 1, Appendix 2, Appendix 3. Meaning that species that are in Appendix 1, they are subjected to stricter rules and controls. Species that are also in Appendix 2, they are certain controls. Species that are in Appendix 3 are mainly species that count themselves individually. We would say we are protecting these species, but we need you to also assist us as partners in the process. It's a bit like species that are being protected, but they don't need necessarily stricter rules in terms of movements and trade. So normally when these countries meet or when we meet, there's also a reflection on what goes to which appendix or which category. There are times when things move from appendix 3 to appendix 2, depending on the threat to those species. Or something moves, if things are going on well, can move from appendix 3 to appendix 2. So there are those, and there are a lot of disagreements in that. The other side to it, which makes it more complex, is that any other country can propose that this species must move from this appendix to the other, irrespective of whether in their own countries they have that those species or they don't have. And they will still vote, even if you disagree, and then you get a decision that is against your wish. So those are some of the dynamics that also play themselves in this space. But in the main, it's to protect the survival of species and ensure that species are not subjected to extinction or trade. That is what this convention deals with. So the imports, exports, and related issues. Let me move on to the next slide. So this convention is a powerful conservation and also a powerful trade tool. It links to the three objectives that I spoke to earlier on biodiversity convention, which is conservation, the protection of species so that they are not threatened, their survival is not threatened. Secondly, sustainable utilization. This is where trade comes in. And then the third part is not necessarily involved in, but that area is growing. In CITES, they call it livelihoods, CITES and livelihoods, trade that also impact and have benefits to socioeconomic development. That's the other part of it. So there are more than so many species that are subjected to this. There are some areas where specific countries have raised certain issues and certain conditions that can only apply to certain countries. For example, the issue of ivory then. South Africa was allowed to do a once-off sale at the time, but with conditions that only for 9 years. There will be for the next 9 years there won't be any proposal that has to do with elephants and ivory trade in particular that expires next year. So those are some of the things that happen in that space. So we are hosting COP 17 more in the city of Johannesburg. It's going to be at Sutton Convention Center from the 24th of September to the 5th of October. We are working hard to find a date that will be dedicated to what we call high-level segment. CITES does not have that. There's no specific high-level segment section or expression that's dedicated to politicians to share their views on how things should work. So we want to have that either before opening or just immediately after opening. So that's a new proposal that we're putting through. And so CITES in South Africa will be a little bit different from others. The main focus from our proposal in South Africa is to reflect on how CITES can affect the sustainable development goals. So it's CITES and SDGs. Then there are proposals. I'm not going to go through each one of them. That will be taking through. There are some species that we'll be putting and proposing that they go to specific appendices. If you go to the next one, there are also issues of trade and clarification that's required. Trade in hunting trophies of species in appendix 2. We need to deal with some interpretation matters and make it much more clear. There's also an issue about the contribution of hunting to conservation. This is at the heart of sustainable utilization. So the biggest fight, of course, is going to be on these two schools of thought and different approaches. No hunting for sustainable use, and the other group that says sustainable utilization is part of conservation. So we'll be looking at that. Issues around illegal wildlife trade, so we'll highlight the need for international cooperation in that, first to deal with wildlife trafficking, and how we share enforcement resources and best practices with each other, and talk to some of those areas there that are listed. In particular, emphasizing the important role played by local communities in protecting species and also in dealing with issues associated with wildlife crime. The agenda looks at administrative issues, it looks at strategic matters of importance, the policy reviews, there are certain policies that would have to be reviewed, the issues around societies and livelihoods that doesn't seem to be gaining traction properly. We should also be looking at the issues of capacity building and also cooperation across, not only ICS has implications to CBD as much as it has implications to UNCCD. So we need to talk protocols that will enhance those synergies. Interpretation and implementation, there are areas that would need interpretation because some of the conditions that are placed in terms of trade are ambiguous in some areas. You find the US has this interpretation, the other country has this interpretation. So we need to also deal with the specific of those. Let's move on to the next one. And the last one is the maintenance and amendment of the appendices. As I indicated, there is this push, some saying go to appendix 1, don't touch, take to appendix 3. So those aspects, there are specific species that by 27th or 17th of April, countries would have sent a lot of proposals. That's when we know and prepare properly that there is this that's coming that is implication to South Africa. At the moment, it's still open. They are coming in this address. There are some that we are starting to pick up that are concerning. There will still be more towards that field immediately after, and we can see how we deal with that, including working with specific countries that would have made those proposals. That's how it is. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. Next. Duty of Climate Change Fame.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I think it's very hard to have any kind of climate change fame. It's a big area of work. Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, what we will be today is run through what South Africa's position was for COP21, the 23rd Conference of the Parties under the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, what was achieved, and briefly what that means for South Africa and for the work going forward. The background, Honourable Members, will be quite familiar with, but it's always useful just to remind ourselves that the 17th Conference of the Parties in Durban in 2011, and it's going to be quite confusing with the 19th COP17, another COP17, but this was a 2011 COP17, which set up a four-year negotiation process for a new legal agreement to be reached, and that negotiation process to be concluded by 2015, and to be implemented from 2020. So that is the Durban platform, and between 2011 and 2014, there was extensive work that was done. South Africa played a very active role in that process. So 2017 achieved the four-year negotiation on new legal agreement, as well as increasing the level of mitigation ambition. COP18 cemented that work and achieved the Doha Amendment, which terminated a lot of the previous negotiation forums and confirmed the agenda of the ad hoc working group on the Durban platform. And this is normal for these international processes. You get an agreement and then you have to confirm the multilateral agenda for the work going forward. At COP19 in Warsaw in 2013, there were decisions around the Warsaw International Mechanism on loss and damage, and I'm mentioning that because it comes back again at COP21. We achieved the Green Climate Fund, and advanced work on the Adaptation Fund, and progress was made on the accounting rules under the second commitment period of the Kyoto Protocol. At COP20 in 2014, that's where the negotiations concluded on the fact that we, as countries, needed to submit intended nationally determined contributions, and there was quite a significant outcome in the sense that there was a pledged $10 billion worth of pledge to the Green Climate Fund, and agreement that a principle of common but differentiated responsibility and respective capability had to be integrated and embedded within the Paris Agreement. So this is important because it gives you the progression over time and the work that is required to get to the Paris Agreement. Next slide. In terms of the key issues that were in negotiation at COP21 in Paris, so we had to fulfill the Durban mandate by adopting the new legally binding agreement. We had to address the ambition gap in the pre-2020 period. We had to agree on how to reflect the principle of common but differentiated responsibility and respective capabilities. We had to find a way of getting parity or evenness and balance between the way that emission reduction and adaptation were reflected in the Paris Agreement, because you'll recall that until COP21, there was a huge emphasis on emission reductions and an under-emphasis on adaptation. And we had to be clear on how we were going to address the means of implementation, including finance, technology, and capacity building. Next slide. We also had to work out a way of strengthening and enhancing the effectiveness and efficiency of climate action at a multilateral level through ways of linking the various international UNFCCC mechanisms. So, for example, making linkages between the Multilateral Adaptation Committee, Technology Executive Committee, the Standing Committee on Finance, etc. So really trying to get some integration into the system. We also needed to conclude the rules for the second commitment period, and we had to work out how to locate response measures as well as the Water International Mechanism on loss and damage. So there was a lot of work that had to be done during COP21, and members will recall that the big achievement really in COP17 was that we managed to break this deadlock of developing countries insisting on a top-down approach to the multilateral system, whereas developing countries were insisting on, developing countries were insisting on a top-down, developed countries were insisting on a bottom-up approach. And the thing about COP17 was that it found a meeting point flat. And COP21 had to find a way of cementing it. South Africa's position, therefore, had a clear mandate to defend the Convention's core principles, in particular equity and common but differentiated responsibility. We were the chair of the Group of 77 in China, and therefore had a very, very clear role in seeking to maintain the strength and unity of the developing country group, and certainly South Africa was congratulated for achieving this. Our position was to give equal priority to adaptation and ensure that we achieve this balance. We wanted to adopt an agreement that was fair, ambitious, and science-based, and that protected the development space of developing countries. And we also needed to ensure that the agreement was adequate in the sense that it was able to keep the temperature increase well below 2 degrees Celsius, that it would be equitable by reflecting the principle of common but differentiated responsibility, and Africa's position was to ensure that pathways were set for achieving the previously agreed goal of $100 billion climate finance by 2020. We wanted to ensure the Water International Mechanism on Loss and Damage was embedded. We needed the adoption of the second commitment period rules. We wanted to ensure the continuation of the Forum on Response Measures. We wanted to ensure that there was the establishment of a permanent institutional arrangement under the Convention for effective implementation of all the various activities that were in the multilateral process on capacity building, and linking to the various content areas. So then the question is, what actually were the outcomes? And I'll start with a high-level overview and then go into more of the detail. So at a high level, COP21 is really regarded as a critical point in the development of the international climate change regime under the UNFCCC, the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. It provides a comprehensive framework. PA there stands for the Paris Agreement. So it provides a comprehensive framework which will from now on guide the international efforts to limit greenhouse gas emissions. It's also important to note that the Paris Agreement itself does not give the necessary detail. And this detail will be negotiated by parties over the next 5 years. So that means that we can't rest on our laurels. We have to work very intensively and as committed as we always have been to ensure that the detailed negotiations are true to the Paris Agreement itself. As members are aware, we played an absolutely central role, not only as chair of the Group of 77, but also as a member and active member and negotiating member, lead member of the Africa Group of Negotiators, as well as BASIC, which is Brazil, South Africa, India, China, and we were negotiating in a national capacity. So it required the delegation to really be almost divided into those three different areas of work. I think just to say that immediately preceding COP21, as well as on the very first day of COP21, there were very, very strong political signals. And those strong political signals came from, firstly, the fact that 187 countries submitted their intended nationally determined contributions, covering close to 100%, some 97% of global greenhouse gas emissions. In addition, politically, there were 150 leaders that attended the opening session. So there was a very strong commitment to ensuring that there was a constructive and positive negotiation process with an outcome that satisfied the requirements. The reality, however, is that the Paris Agreement is in fact a hybrid model, and that is true to the COP17 negotiated agreement of finding the sweet spot, the soft point, the sweet spot between the bottom up and the top down negotiating imperatives of the developed and developing countries. So as we go through the actual outcomes, there will be an indication of which element is bottom-up and which element is top-down. It's useful just to get that overview because it gives a sense of the balance that was achieved in the Paris Agreement. So there were a number of global goals achieved. The temperature goal is well below 2 degrees Celsius, pursuing efforts towards 1.5 degrees. There has to be global peaking of emissions as soon as possible. And this links to the cost of adaptation, and we'll go back, we'll also report about the adaptation, global adaptation goal, and the need to increasingly enhance capability to respond to the adaptation imperatives that developing countries are facing. Also, as a global goal, that international climate finance levels need to be consistent with low-emission development strategies and with achieving the transition to climate-resilient economies. The principle of commitment differentiated responsibility and respective capability and equity are embedded within the detail of the content of the Paris Agreement, and you will also see that coming through as we unpack the content of the agreement. For mitigation or emission reduction, countries' commitments are based on their nationally determined contributions, so this is clearly part of the bottom-up approach to the agreement. There are legal commitments to submit the nationally determined contributions every 5 years. So multilaterally, there is a monitoring of the extent to which countries are doing what is required. This is the top-down element of it. There's a public registry of nationally determined contributions, so that's part of the transparency. And the principle of progressive increase in levels of ambition is part of that multilateral monitoring of the extent to which countries are meeting their intended nationally determined contributions, which become nationally determined contributions. For mitigation, developed countries are required to achieve quantitative economy-wide emission reduction targets, is the acronym there. That is where the principle of conduct differentiated responsibility is embedded. Developed countries shall achieve quantitative economy-wide emission reduction targets. It's a top-down directive, whereas developing countries will move to the preemptive over time, which is the bottom-up part of the agreement. And it embeds the principle of common and differentiated responsibility. Reducing emissions from deforestation and forest degradation, the red plus tools are still maintained, and we have provisions around tools to enable cooperative markets and non-market mechanisms. For adaptation, the global challenge of adaptation is linked to global mitigation ambition levels, and we have the recognition of adaptation as a global contribution, the global goal on adaptation. There's a provision that requires, or that is not quite as strong as we would have liked it, but it is nonetheless a provision that seeks strengthening of adaptation cooperation. National adaptation plans need to be developed by all countries, that's NAS, apologies for the acronym there, and need to be communicated internationally. There's a public registry of adaptation contribution, and adaptation needs to be reported internationally. So there you can see the balance between mitigation and adaptation, and the formulation really of the adaptation commitments, reporting, and the transparency that gives some level of, certainly from an African perspective, it addresses the concern from Africa's perspective of needing balance between adaptation and mitigation. Loss and damage is the continuation and enhancement of the water loss and damage mechanism, and international cooperation and support for the loss and damage mechanisms embedded in the outcome. On finance, developed countries shall provide finance for mitigation and adaptation, so there's the top-down directive. Developing countries are encouraged to provide finance. All sources of finance are sought after, so that also refers not only to donor or grant-based funding sources, but also private sector funding sources. And there needs to be a biennial communication of finance contributions, which then brings some kind of transparency to the finance contributions. On technology, there's a continuation of the technology mechanism. There's an overarching technology framework that is embedded, and that is part of the efforts to integrate the various multilateral instruments within the UNFCCC system. And there's a commitment to international technology cooperation. On capacity building, the Paris Committee on Capacity Building needs to be adopted at the first meeting of the parties of the Paris Agreement. There's provision on international capacity building cooperation, in other words, to enhance and support cooperation on capacity building. There's enhanced public awareness and communication of capacity building action. Next slide. There's extensive set of provisions around transparency, and this is something that certainly from an African perspective we worked on hard. It was quite a difficult negotiation. The part of the agreement is that there is an enhanced transparency framework based on existing reporting, so that we do not need to start again from the work that we have already done around our greenhouse gas inventory and our biennial update report. There's a provision that requires tracking of mitigation, adaptation and support provided and received. There's country performance reports that have to that require a technical review, and reports are subject to multilateral consideration. So there you have part of the top-down element. What still needs to be negotiated are the detailed rules around transparency. A big part of the agreement is the global stock take, and this is part in, at a multilateral level, we are assessing collective progress to inform the nationally determined contributions every 5 years. So in other words, in that multilateral process, there will be an adding up of the work and the achievement through the nationally determined contributions, and an assessment where what has been committed and what has actually been achieved shows a gap. And that gap relates to or has an implication for the temperature goal of 2 degrees or 1.5 degrees. So that global stocktake is a really critical part of it. And that global stocktake covers mitigation, adaptation, and legal implementation. There's a facilitated compliance mechanism, which is comprised of experts, but there is still quite a lot of work to be done around negotiating the detailed maternity procedures and rules before we get to 2020. Entry into force requires 55 countries and 55% of the world's emissions, and certainly South Africa has initiated its ratification of the Paris Agreement. In terms of decisions, pre-2020 decisions, the 11th meeting of the parties concluded the set of rules for the second commitment period of the Kyoto Protocol, and that really concludes a four-year negotiation process. The 11th meeting of the parties also concluded review of the modalities and procedures for the Clean Development Mechanism, which makes it easier for African countries, for example, to use and implement the CDM. We established a technical process on adaptation to identify concrete opportunities for strengthening resilience, reducing vulnerabilities, and increasing the implementation of adaptation actions in the pre-2020 period. There were financial pledges made into the adaptation fund, and there were financial pledges made into the least developed country fund. So what does this mean for South Africa? Well, we've already said that it represents a turning point in a global climate governance and multilateral rules-based system. Critically, it does not rewrite or reinterpret the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, and that was a bottom line for the Africa Group. It serves as a model for consensus building and for consensus-based multilateral decision-making. And it's a model that will probably be followed in other UN forums. It will be open to signature from the 22nd of April, where there will be a lead of event in New York it will be a lead of event in New York at the UN, and that will really initiate the ratification between the 21st of April 2017 and 2020. And it will enter into force 30 days after 55 parties, current 55% of emissions, have ratified the agreement. The next slide. Oh, thank you. So South Africa is already taking action in terms of our programs, our emission reduction programs, to build as well as our adaptation programs to build a nation's resilience to the impact of climate change and to accelerate our transition to a lower carbon and climate resilient society. Really what needs to happen as we go forward, there needs to be increased investment in our renewable energy, public transport, energy efficiency, waste management and land restoration initiatives countrywide in order to reduce the greenhouse gas emissions intensity of our economy. We need all spheres of government to refine the strategies for adapting to the impact of climate change and for enhancing the capacity of institutions, services, infrastructure, human settlements, etc., to respond and bounce back from the impacts of climate change. It requires South Africa to implement our 5-year emission reduction cycle, which sets carbon budgets for companies whose production processes are carbon intense. It also means that, well, this emission reduction cycle further requires companies to submit plans that demonstrate how they will meet their targets, and requires companies to report regularly on their greenhouse gas emissions for the compilation of their national greenhouse gas emissions inventory. We will have to report on implementation of our nationally determined contribution, both the adaptation and the mitigation part of it. We will need to update and communicate our NDC every 5 years, and we will formulate and communicate by 2020 a long-term low greenhouse gas emissions development strategy. On adaptation, it requires us to continue and enhance, I think, the work that we are doing on national strategy for adaptation to impacts of climate change. We need to strengthen our early warning system, and we need to strengthen our institutional capacity to respond to extreme events such as drought and floods, the drought that we're experiencing now is such an example, and slow onset events such as shifting rainfall patterns that do have an impact on crop production. We will need to submit adaptation communication periodically, which would clearly identify what our national adaptation priorities are, what our implementation plans are, and what support is needed. And we need to increase the pace of implementation, as really was agreed at not only our national climate change dialogue, but over the period in 2015 of provincial consultation processes in advance of our submitting our tender nationally determined contribution. Next slide. Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, that I think is the overview. And I think, Honourable Chair, what would be useful is that we come back to you with the work that we are currently doing, which is to do the adding up of what the emission reduction, what the quantification of the emission reduction outcome will be of our major strategic mitigation programs, such as our renewable energy program, our energy efficiency program, our green transport program, and also to look at what it means as we start decommissioning the older power stations as Maluku and Kusile come in. Maluku and Kusile are much more energy efficient in comparison with the older power stations. So what we have done is we've done a calculation, and we are working on increasingly refining the calculation of where we are now in terms of our inventory, our greenhouse gas inventory, and where we need to be by 2025 and 2030 to meet our nationally determined contribution and commitment. And the other part of the detail on implementation would be to present to honourable members the work that is being done to consolidate the adaptation, national sector adaptation strategies, and the provincial adaptation vulnerability assessments and strategies which are currently being formulated. And that would give honourable members a quite a detailed overview of what the sectors have actually built into their own adaptation planning or into their own planning frameworks, and what the provinces are building into their own planning frameworks to facilitate the transition to a climate resilient society. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Judy. We have about 15 or so minutes before we ask the will to come forward and make the 10 propositions. But we have these minutes to look into everything that was said by the department as members. There might be issues that we want to raise, but again, let's just for granted that the intention, while we got everything we got, was so that we are able to say how moving forward are we going to interact with the department. On all these matters, even on matters that perhaps we were not necessarily cited on. And I think from where I'm sitting, those matters might speak more broadly, not on the everyday work that the department does, which we have been able to attend to on a quarterly basis, but on broadly whether are we meeting our agreements on the multilateral protocols and conventions. Are we on track? We are not necessarily in our posture and framework created a situation where we are able to meet with the partners and drill down on our multilateral work. We have not done that. So it's an area that we might have to look at, and I think we will have to look into that area. So colleagues, the platform is yours now. Any issue you can raise within that ambit, Barutuma.
Thank you very much. For me, it's not a question actually, it's just a comment of appreciation. I've listened to what the DG has to say on her presentation. I think she has covered the most basics, which are currently the fiscal issues that you need to look when you go to the new financial year. I was really impressed when she mentioned when it comes to Program 2, where they will be looking into capacitating the local CS government, like the provincial and local government. And I was also impressed where it's also mentioned on Program 3, the draft coastal waters discovery commission that will be developed, and other issues that she has just raised, which are of critical importance, which are always mentioned this at this point. I think we are on the right track. I think she's on the right track. But what I would like to see, whether the finance are there to carry out this responsibility for the priorities of the entity, that would be what the healthy portfolio will be looking forward to hear and to see if it will be adequately funded to be able to carry out the mandate that she has just applied to the portfolio. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
No, thank you very much. Also, I don't think there are some questions to pose, except to say that what a DG and the team and the opening remarks of the DM, the Deputy Minister, has clearly indicated that the job is clearly well cut off. The tasks are clear, obligations are clear, responsibilities are clear, programs are clear. Particularly interested more on IT's by the DDG issue. Has given us more information, we are better equipped. So for me, it symbolizes an update on the latest development and the number of fronts that the department is going to push for. So I also join my colleague to appreciate this detailed work that is set up. The PLC has also said this is a department that is still functioning at a political level, at administration level. Thank you, we appreciate this input. Thank you.
Thanks, and thanks for the presentation. In the main, the input by the department was to help us know what is the focus from the strategic plan of the department as well as the LPP, the annual performance plan, so that we know what is it that we should focus on as we hold you accountable then to the end of the term, and what is it that perhaps from the strategic plan is falling by the wayside, and we are not able to ensure that everything happens as expected. And we have covered a wide range of issues that will assist us to ensure that we are able to get the department accountable on all those issues. And as colleagues have mentioned, we do have the framework. Ours for now may not really be engaged more,
from the detail, because all we wanted was to ensure that they scan or clarify what they are busy with, so that we move together with them. Of course, there will be issues, Chair, which may either be answered now or in future. We may get the responses looking in at time and so on. We always talk, Chair, about other departments that are relevant to our work, which dear on its own may not do much, like when we talk about the Department of Energy, Department of Transport, and many others. And at times, we don't have a situation where these other departments have at the level of the portfolio committee, unless also we collaborate with our other portfolio committees, who are able to get a sense of what they are doing, where they are, whether we are achieving or not. And if they are not achieving, what is it that can be done? You know, I'm saying it's a difficulty that we must acknowledge that exists and we may want to deal with that. Because in the event where there's non-compliance, what do we do? And I'm saying it may not be for the department alone to clarify that. That included, there are many departments. In fact, it's like we must be working, or the department must be working with almost every other department. You know, the other is that with the COP21 Paris Agreement, there will be issues that require a government-wide kind of approach, and even other key stakeholders who may need to play a role. And that may not be that we've got mandatory instruments to cause them to actually account in some of this kind of work. What is it that we'll need to be doing? And I'm saying, Chair, I don't expect that here and now we are clarified, but I think we must ensure that we are able to proceed and look at other instruments or mechanisms that could allow us to handle that matter. We're supposed at some point to review the climate change white paper. Of course, at some point we must be taken on board as to that process and how is it that it will be going taken forward. I'm just raising that issue. When we come to speak about what is it that we'll be focusing on ourselves, part of that is because it's the role of Parliament, is passing the laws or processing legislation and so on and so on. And that's really in our court. So there is that part that the department has where we will need to ensure oversight over. But there are those kind of issues that are parliamentary in nature, which at our own level will not be able to handle without necessarily all the time causing the department to be moving with us. The last section, on slide 14, I might have missed this, Jude, on page 7, under review of adequacy, the global scope. The second bullet talks about covering mitigation and adaptation and MOI, or what is means of implementation. Yes, we must know that. We must not be struggling alone somewhere to say what is this thing. And when we call you, we don't remember what you presented. And so on. So I must know from here.
Perhaps as we just conclude on your again, let me join colleagues that again thank you. But you see that's the good part of working with a department that knows what it is doing. Because if you didn't know what you were doing, we're going to ask many questions on what you're doing. Now you know what you're doing. Said to the DG and Deputy Minister, when you start your presentation, you start by alerting us to what the South African Environment Outlook says and what the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development says. Are these the only authorities, first of all, on our environment or monitoring of our environment? That's the first issue. The second issue is just a matter that you might be able to or might not be able to finish now, just for purposes of planning, because we are as parliament, we must not plan. When we talk of weapons, what is the status as we see it now? Just on weapons, if we are saying, you know, there are serious challenges, probably we might compromise our water provisioning, etc., etc., but where are we now? And with everything that we do to alone or together with other departments, these strategies that we are embarking, where will they take us? At a high level. And it will not be that only issue. Even on other issues that you have raised, e.g. emissions, greenhouse gas emissions, where are we as we speak now? And with our peak plateau decline after 2030, come 2050, just high level, because you see, it allows us also to speak with authority. We know where we are, we know what we're doing. Even as members of parliament, when we get to the advanced stage of where we are, including on pollution, by the way, what would be the ideal indicator? We know that you do report to us, you said that we are broadly at 1.3. Would that be the ideal indicator, or you plan to be at 1.3, or we should be somewhere else? But where are we now? With everything we are putting on this work, your standards, the requests that have been made by others to adhere to those standards under 2020. So I will then say the same drilling down of where we are at this point in time will be helpful for our planning purposes as parliament. But it also answers the question, is our environment continuously deteriorating? Or are we taking this OECD report into account, the measures that we are putting in place, are they arresting the deterioration at a broad level? So it will be helpful, and again, we don't want you to give us the information now. You can give us the information at a time when you are able to. But if you have it here in the preliminary and we have not seen it, by all means you can alert us to that information. We will then allow Bakshelem.
I'm sorry that I've come behind you. I thought you were going to just point us if we are not raising our hands as usual. But thank you for allowing me. One must appreciate the work that is done by the Department of Environment Affairs. And it's a known fact that if you look to adherence to their mandate, they are very, very good. My only concern was what they are raising here, you know, it involves other departments like Culture and Department of Water and Sanitation. Whilst we have such a good plan, how do we ensure that the engagement of these departments, especially the commitment, because if you look, the current situation comes to a drought, the water, you know, I mean, the department is coming with good plans. But now when it comes to this department, how are we going to ensure that what we see here, what we want to happen here, these departments are making it a possibility. Go to municipalities, you'll find that, they don't look at these issues on a long run. The only thing that if people want at the water, where is the water tanker? But the issue of, sustaining, I'm just looking at that, what is that, because we'll be happy to see that the department is coming with a good plan. But what about this department? How can we monitor that what they're saying here, it happens there? Because I don't think that only us can make this happen. We are part of the National Development Plan. But the other two departments, to me, if there can be an engagement to see what is the commitment that they are going to show as far as the department is doing, especially the environmental affairs. Thank you.
Thank you. The department, if we want to, again, we are not saying report on these issues that we are saying, no. You can give us information anytime when you have that in, so that it assists our planning mechanism. And also to see whether are we making it or breaking it, taking the whole scheme of what is obtaining into us. Did you?
Thank you, Chair. Thanks to the honourable members. I will respond to some of the questions and my colleagues actually can also add. The first question or comment, honourable member, on the budget. I certainly, we will demonstrate with the budget allocation that we have that we don't have enough resources to deal with the challenges at hand in totality. But with the resources that are available, we can demonstrate what we can achieve. And that's what the APP is trying to do. And then the other comment, Chair, just to say that in this line, firstly, we have a number of reports. The outlook is then what is presented in Lima, which is what the state of the air report, the state of the biodiversity report, and all that. So those exist. That's what we were taking out of. And those are more authentic. But they also involve the scientific community of the country in assessing the state of the rivers, the state of the coast, and so on, and the state of the air. So that information is available, and we could present those at different times if the committee would like those details to be shared. And the second, and then the OECD is very much an interesting performance review that is done externally, not in the country, but undertaken by a panel of countries, which offers us an opportunity to peer review. It's a peer review mechanism, and therefore we can assess against other countries of the world, particularly the developed countries, but definitely Brazil, Costa Rica, and the other emerging economies. We would, if there are other reports that may be available, for instance, the World Bank on the Renewables, it's a separate report. So you may be able to find other reports, and therefore we could then make reference to those reports. And members also presented the greenhouse gas index, which then tells us where we are on the various substances that are linked to then our challenges of dealing with climate change. So Judy will add there. Then can I then say that on the baseline, what we attempt to do on the stress lens in each of the key performance strategic objectives, we have then an indicator. Then we see the baseline. Sorry, Chair, you can't see there. So there are areas, for instance, on greenhouse gas emissions, we know where we are. On wetlands, also, there's a full report, which is why in the problem statement, I was outlining that we have
the 48%, but we can give them the full number of the wetlands in the country. 48% of those are critically endangered. And we then say, in the stage of the output report or the state of the environment report, then say, if we did not have the investments that we are making now on rehabilitation wetlands, we would be worse off. So there is progressive realization of some positive outcome, but still the environment overall is still, it would tolerate worse if we did not make the intervention that we are making. And therefore, in the report, and the OECD report outlines, for instance, where we do positive work as a country, and the outlook report similarly. But all the overall, I think high level, yes, we still have a problem of a deteriorating environment. The question then is going to be, if we're not as industrialized, what could be our worst case scenario? Which is why our long-term mitigation scenarios, for instance, in respect of greenhouse gases, anticipate that our emissions are growing over a certain period of time. But then there is a point where they must peak and begin to decline. That's why then the trajectory is outlined in that fashion. The last comment, I think those are the questions Judy can respond to. And lastly, the report, in terms of our international obligations, Chair, and I think Honorable Makubele was raising an issue about how we link the work of the committee to that of the areas that are not quite covered. We have an email report that we would table to Parliament, which is then indicating our progress in respect of the various multilateral environmental agreements. And that report is due to come to the committee in April. So we will then have sight of that and will then present it. Thanks, Judy.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. Thank you, DG. I think the first question was what kind of mandatory instrument, I think Honourable Whip asked the question, what kind of mandatory instrument is available to enable us to monitor whether or not we are on track for achieving our COP21 commitment, or on track for monitoring and achieving what South Africa's objectives are in transitioning to a lower carbon and climate-resilient economy. And Honourable Members, there are a number of different types of instruments. There's a planning instrument in the form of a medium-term strategic framework in which the targets that are relevant to other departments, so for example the Green Transport Program, the Renewable Energy Program, the Energy Efficiency Program, the targets of those programs are integrated into the medium-term strategic framework. So that is a planning instrument that enables us to in which Cabinet requires and Parliament requires those relevant departments to meet their 5-year targets. So that's the one instrument. Second instrument in terms of an actual legal instrument to monitor and track our emissions is what is already being debated, and that's the reporting regulations under the Air Quality Act. And that has been gazetted for final public comment before, and that'll be a 30-day period before they are finalised, and that requires the high-emitting companies to report against their carbon budgets. The carbon budgets that at this stage do not have a legal instrument, but over time will have a legal instrument. And then essentially we are using the emission reduction framework, which we would very much like to present to Honourable Members in its detail, which is setting the carbon budget, requiring pollution prevention plans by high-emitting companies and requiring those companies to report. And that, at this stage, are the key instruments. The carbon budgeting is not yet a legal instrument, the reporting is, and the pollution prevention planning will be very shortly. So essentially that is our concision instrument. So we have elements in, of the legal instrument, and as honourable members are aware, we are starting to draft a climate act to fill in the legal instrumental gaps. So that on the emission reduction side. On adaptation reporting, that is slightly more complicated because it's a much more diversified set of indicators that we need to report on. We're needing to report on how resilient our water resources are. We're needing to report on food security, which is a very big discussion right now in the drought, in the context of the drought coordinating committee, because it involves a number of departments. It involves water affairs, it involves agriculture, it involves rural development. We need to be able to report on health security in the context of a changing climate. So, honourable members, what we are doing there is working with the sector departments and stakeholders to define what our adaptation goals are, national goals per sector, what kind of adaptation goals are, our goals are, and building that into our national adaptation strategy. Some of that work has already been done by sector departments through their own sector adaptation strategy. So we are drawing on that, refining it, and of course the long-term adaptation scenarios provide the evidence base for that work. It's not an exact science in the context of adaptation. It's a much more exact science in the context of emission reduction. Honourable members and honourable chair, in terms of the question around our peak plateau and decline, going back to emission reduction, our emission trajectory range, the commitment we put out into the international space, is that our emission trajectory range by 2030 would be between 398 and 618 megatons. If you just round off those numbers, it's easier to remember, between 400 and 600. I mean, it's just to round those off. So by 2030, we need to be, and we said that we would peak by 2025, but our plateau between 2025 and 2035 must be between 400 to 600 megatons. So now the calculation that we've got to increasingly refine is where are we right now with our greenhouse gas inventory, and remember we've had the 2010 greenhouse gas inventory, the 2012 one will come to the portfolio committee as soon as we have the go-ahead from Cabinet to publish it for public comment. And we have our inventory every 2 years. The end of the 2010 inventory shows that we are not that much below 600 megatons. We are from, I think we are on 538 megatons right now, and the 2012 industry shows some efficiencies and some improvements, and we can present the exact numbers. But the calculation is about how we make sure between now and 2025, or now 2025 and 2030, we tighten our ability to slow down the growth of our emissions so that we stay within that 600 threshold. And we are comfortably within that 600 threshold. And we have done a first round of that calculation, which we would be very happy to present to honourable members. Obviously, it's a process of iteratively improving those calculations based on our understanding of what the strategic program, where we're going with our renewables, where we're going with our integrated resource plan, where we're going with the green transport, where we're going with low emission agriculture, and other such key strategic programs. I hope that helps, honourable chair.
Chair, just before the DM, the question on the coordination and how you work with other departments. I think we can answer it for the department, but for the committee in terms of our oversight is the matter that I would probably suggest that the chair deals with it. So in the department, currently we work with provinces through the structures, the intergovernmental structures called MINMEC, and then there's a technical coordination mechanism with heads of departments, and also we have ALGA participation there, and other national departments, water, agriculture, world development, and mining, in respect of outcome 10, where we have shared outputs and shared outcomes. Of course, more can be done, but there is also ministerial engagement between the ministers of those departments, and then there's a cluster system of, but that does not involve provinces, only then the national departments that are involved, both at DG level and on chief director, and also then at ministerial level. So I think the committee would then have to decide how in parliament that coordination also happens. Thanks.
Thank you. Chair,
while we humbly accept the compliments from the honourable members, but to ask it should never be enough, we would always say that. But I think that the DG has covered me on the issue of other departments. I think the portfolio committee is better placed to assist us on that. If we could check with other departments, for instance, let's take water and sanitation, what is their simple plan on the harvesting of rainwater? As we only see rain coming down, but how do we capture that water? So I think that the committee is a better place to check those issues. On the issues of energy efficiency, how is public works making sure that government buildings are indeed retrofitted? It's not a simple task to ask the department to check on these things, but for the portfolio committee it would be much easier for them to assist us on that. On the issue of human settlements, how are they making sure that we see eco-friendly dwellings from their side? And to be on the issue of climate change, I think we should also try and make it very clear and specific as to what does this Paris Agreement translate to in terms of making sure that we deal with issues of inequality, issues of unemployment, issues of poverty, ending of poverty and so forth. If you look at what slide is this one? But it's on the sites. When we talk about this powerful tool for biodiversity conservation, when we talk about 35 species of plants and animals, surely this should make a difference in the lives of our people, taking into account the number of species that we have. So all I'm saying is we should have specific, tangible results out of this richness of the biodiversity that we have. Yeah, thanks, Chair.
Okay. I think one issue will come to when we drill in deep our own biodiversity will be what we mean by sustainable use. But as we prepare for CITES, because all of us should be speaking from the same page, and again, what improvements can we make in this space? As we are indicating, but for now we didn't want to go into the details of the presentation. We wanted to know what work do you have in store for yourselves, so that on the basis of that work we are then able to make our own plans. And at this point in time, I know that I have another meeting at 1, but I just told them I will see them at 1:30. We will hand over to the whip, who will then make some propositions. They are not necessarily conclusive at this point in time, because it's something that all of us could reflect on as members and come back to. David?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. In fact, this program that we shall have dealt with today is going to be adopted in another portfolio committee meeting. The one coming, not necessarily today, because we may not have that time. So amendments or other things and discussion can still happen. I just to indicate that we're looking at broadening our scope of work other than just focusing on the department plan on a week-to-week basis.
Sorry, colleagues. Unfortunately, the people that I thought I would meet at 20 past, they have another meeting at 20 past with the House Chair and the Secretary of Parliament, so I have to leave now. But I'm leaving you in capable hands of the whip and the team. So thank you very much. I'm leaving now. May God with you. The whip is now the acting chair. Thank you.
Thanks, just to continue with the presentation, I was saying that we're looking at a situation where instead of our program just solely be based on what the department has from time to time, we are going to broaden our own scope of work. So it will not just have to be going after the department on a week-to-week basis. Probably that will even give you time to do other things as we are busy with our own program, broadly speaking. But then saying, colleagues, that Parliament's role is about those five major issues. And as the portfolio committee does its work on behalf of Parliament as a whole, our focus areas will be those. And we have got something to do on each and every one of them. So you will see that it's not just about oversighting the executive, but there are other things that we need to be able to do. Passing legislation, public participation, dealing with the budget, oversight, and facilitating international relations. The mandate, as second part, is from largely a lot of documentation, starting from the Freedom Charter. There are clauses that relate to us. I can actually mention a number of them, but broadly, that is a basic document adopted by our forefathers some time back in 1955 and endorsed by the ANC as well as it's now the ruling party in 1956. And there are quite a lot of other documents that inform our work today, including the Constitution of South Africa, Section 24. I think all of us will know that part relevant to environment and the human rights. Manifesto commitment, from time to time you will know that as we approach elections, there are particular commitments that we make, and some of those are relevant to us. The sort of pronouncement and the happiness in the photos that come shortly after that to indicate we always extract from those documents what is relevant to us. The NDP, the sustainable development goals that have just been presented even by the department today, and the international convention protocols. Then there are priorities of government. All the five priorities are relevant to us. I may not necessarily elaborate on each one of them, but you know all of us that both from the fourth administration as well as the fifth administration, those priority areas of government have not changed. So on creation of more jobs, decent work, sustainable and livelihoods, for inclusive growth becomes relevant, issues of green jobs, whatever we may talk about, the rural development, land reform and food security. Even as we deal with land restitution, we bring that on the basis that we must protect, conserve, as well as restore the environment and so on, and the opportunities that come with that. Education, There are quite a lot of issues there, even including ensuring that basic education will have issues of environment on its curricula. That will focus on these and issues of skilling on health. We know that we need a safe, clean and healthy environment, and there will be issues that we deal with on fighting crime and corruption. Then we have a role there as we protect endangered species, as we deal with issues of poaching of marine resources, of rhino, whatever. So all those we happen to be dealing with. So I was just saying, without elaborating that much, that they remain relevant to us, and then that is not necessarily last view with respect to guiding principles. One is on sustainable development, on equitable access to environmental resources, public participation in all planning decisions which affect the development and management of natural resources, fourth, public right of access to information, and of course on issues of environmental concerns. Fifth, the integrated approach to environmental issues that relate to all sectors of the society, recognition of integrated nature of the global environment, and the need for an international cooperation in policy making. Even the scope of our work, which all that I was saying, I was trying to pave way of that which will be our area for focus from now going forward. And why we are running at that, because that will be a context on which we're moving. One is that we're going to be raising critical environmental issues in the public discourse through public debate and hearings. So it may not necessarily be the department, as I said, the department may participate, but may be dealing generally with the public out there around those issues that may need to be elevated to the public platforms. Second, intensify engagement with the non-governmental organizations on various topical issues of environment, including research institutions, institutions of higher learning, and coordinate and lead efforts in addressing climate change challenges and its response measures with specific bias to addressing the vulnerability of the poor. So those will be issues that we'll need to deal with. Fourth, ensure a government-wide reform program towards the achievement of a low-carbon economy, energy efficiency program, just society, environmentally sustainable and climate change resilient South Africa. It's actually pursued. It may not necessarily be perceived, but pursued, that we need to pursue that kind of a government-wide program. Fifth, that the portfolio committee should ensure effective oversight visits over to verify the implementation of the department programs, while at the same time still ensuring that the DIA and its entities realize and account on their performance on the strategic plan and annual performance plan. So you see that DIA will become part of what we shall be doing, not necessarily the main institution that we engage. Also ensuring the implementation of the SDGs, that a need for Parliament through the Portfolio Committee to conduct public awareness campaigns on SDGs. It may be that we understand these issues ourselves because we deal with them on day-to-day basis. But I wonder if the public out there have come to appreciate what it is that is in the Sustainable Development Goals. So it may be that we want to take this particular process to them, still pass legislation, and intensify our collaboration with various other portfolio committees that are relevant to our work. We refer to the joint meetings that we may need to have with fiber water, agriculture, and all of those will be relevant. Ensuring oversight in terms of international protocols, both bilateral and multilateral, those which were referred not very long, that the chairman was saying, were then done much in terms of understanding what happens, whether there's value for money, and so on and so on. So we really need to as well focus on those. The last part is the intention of working with the Select Committee and other legislatures at the provincial level and so on programs that we may be able to do jointly, where possible. It may not be on everything, but where possible, we may need to conduct joint oversight visits and ensuring that we engage GM specific issues of common interest. For instance, when we're dealing with bills, it may be useful that instead of dealing with bills separately, we may actually get the same briefings by GIA and so on and so on. The other will be around the effective coordination of our work since the Houses Together constitute Parliament of the Republic of South Africa and should be seen as complementary in their work and in the interest of our people, being cost effective as well as efficient in approach. So that will be what will inform our work going forward. And all we're saying is that it's not inclusive. Members will still engage with this, make their own views, submit those, and we'll be able to effect changes where we could after agreement and then adopt this particular program in the next portfolio of committee meetings. It may not necessarily be today, but it will take almost everything that was presented today for us to understand exactly what we think we should be doing, whether we have left, something out or not, include all of those so that we have got a program that can take us into the end of the 2016-17 financial year as well as 2016 to 2019 during our participation in this portfolio committee, if we all shall still be there to reach that point. Thank you, colleagues and members. I'm not sure if there's anything that the members would want to raise related to broadening of our scope of work other than focusing on the department per se.
Honorable Vic, for the presentation and for the work well done. Clearly, you are saying that it is not exhaustive, it is not conclusive. So it means it's work in progress, which then means that there's room for input, engagement, comments, etc., and report in after form. So with that, Chair, I would propose maybe we say in the next portfolio committee meeting we conclude our comments, because clearly it's the first time we're interacting, it's difficult to read it in detail, but we welcome it, it symbolizes the vision, and also the room work differently as opposed to a conformity. So I welcome the input, and then in the next portfolio committee, as members of the portfolio committee, we can finalize. Obviously, we need some time to go and just report, but the broad part of the document are support. Thanks.
Honorable, thanks very much, Chief. Actually, I would like to support what Honorable Mabib is saying. Let us have the chance as a Democratic Alliance as well to go and look at the document. If there are any issues with the proposed program, then we will highlight them and then we'll agree on the next meeting. Thank you, Chief.
Any other hands? Honorable Kekan?
Thank you. Chair, ke support anali this proposal is one that I must invite you. And then apology for coming late. Thank you very much.
Apology taken, Honorable Nyams.
Thanks, Chairperson. Mine is just let us get this document so that we can go through it. Thank you, Chair.
It will be part of the package after this. We'll ensure that we have got it, all of you. It will be packaged together with everything else that was presented, so that it's a proposed or first draft that we'll be engaging with later on. Honorable Edward.
Thank you, Chief. I have nothing to say.
She seems to like a little for agreeing with everybody else. agreeing with everybody. Colleagues, therefore, in terms of the program, we've done the other presentations in we've done the program. Of course, the chair did make an indication that we could not get one presentation that we were supposed to have got from WF, Rep. We'll still interact with them, as the program says, that we'll interact with research institutions, institutions of higher learning, and everybody else. We'll still invite them to the portfolio committee just to broaden our understanding of the issue. We will not take the department's presentation on finances because today's focus is not really on that. We will then deal with those issues in future when we have to come. But let me, without wasting much time, thank everybody for having me to this particular sitting of the portfolio committee. Thank you, DM, DG, and your team. Thank my colleagues for having made it. At least we know where we're going. Once we adopt this particular program, we'll be able to be focused. There won't be challenges anymore. We'll know what we need to do. And I just hope that even the department will welcome the new approach because it will relieve you of some burden or responsibility that you have now been facing that took you away from your Pretoria offices and focusing on what we needed to do and working in Parliament almost on a weekly basis. I will therefore wish all of you who are leaving Cape Town to travel safely, and those of us who are remaining to continue with the good work we're doing to the nation. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you, sir. There's lunch and food. Where? Or at the desk somewhere. So for us to avoid the wasteful experience.